Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, still cross-pollinating in the Bay Area. So tonight, Michaela Gaston and I will be presenting at Open Secret at 6 p.m. in San Rafael, and you can find out more about that by emailing rob@opensecretbookstore.com. So yes, what a world. We're all engaged in cooling out the conflagration, calling all culture doctors, public dreamers, artists of atmosphere, visionary activists, pragmatic mystics, grumpy secular skeptics, all fellow aspiring agents of the compassionate trickster. Yeah, and I'll also be doing, as well as tonight at Open Secret, a Saturday noon living expo, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., Bodhisattva Coyote, Rumi's Guide to Participatory Animism. All details will be found at coyotenetworknews.com. So last Thursday, one fantastic accomplices, Michaela Gaston and Brianna DiMara, and I presented Majnun, yes, again, Crazy for the Divine, our presentation at the Bioneers Conference at Fantastic Freight and Salvage, a place of repurposing. And we will now be listening to a liberated portion of that. So here we go.
Good evening, everyone. We're so happy to see you. Give yourself a round of applause. My name is Michaela, and this is Brianna. And we, of course, are going to bring in the razzle dazzle before our fabulous Caroline Casey. Ah. So shall we, my darling?
We shall.
Very good. Thank you.
Welcome teammates, and my wonderful accomplices. We want to spice up our language, you know, because so much of our language for relationships is sort of like spouse, life partner, you know. But Pluto says, how about accomplices? And these are splendid accomplices. So as Ami said, and we've been working, cahooting together for decades and
years.
And lifetimes with Brianna.
You know,
and more to come. But say a little more about Elegba opening the room.
Mm-hmm. So Elegba is the keeper of the crossroads. It's where you go. It's kind of like the breaker of the energy with the number three. And so anytime you want something to open the gates to bring in all the magic, you put three pennies at the crossroads to Elegba, and you ask Elegba to open the roads, make the decisions clear anything that's in your path, in your way, in your vision, and let all the goodness and the magic come through. Ashe, ashe, ashe.
And the storyteller, do you want to say anything about the storyteller?
I wrote that song for my mom.
Okay. Can't hear you. Wait.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I don't have a microphone. Sorry. I wrote that song for my mom, who is my original storyteller, of course. Inspired many other stories throughout life.
And so we have Elegba and we have Scheherazade, really the quintessential storyteller, the trickster redeemer, like Hijan the Conqueror of the South. These are different kinds of qualities of heroes that we want to bring in now and encourage. It's the Scheherazade through her trickster rascalry. She liberates women, liberates the land, liberates even the tyrant himself, not counting on it, but willing to do it. Remember, we are in Accountability Week, and as Stormy Daniels said, you know, she refers to the former guy as Tiny. So Tiny met a little bit of accountability, but we're going to increase it for his own good. Because part of the you know, again, the mythological news service, so out there people are like, oh, it wasn't a very important case, or why did it take so long? We go, no, it was perfect. I have a great fondness for Stormy Daniels. I've met her. My head has been between her bosoms. It was like Darshan, really. But she said, you know, it wasn't an important case, but this pussy grabbed back. And remember when they had their brief, like a little mushroom tryst, but he was showing her a magazine with himself and maybe his family on it, and she goes, do people fall for this? And then she said, do you remember? She said, drop your pants right now. And he's like, really? And she goes, yeah. And she spanked him with a magazine with his face on it, and he liked it. It was like, we knew that was the woman, because on the mythological level,
tiny guys. Jupiter is at 17 plus Libra. The metaphor for that is men placed under arrest, accountability. And when he was indicted, and there's more to come, by three women primarily, you know, it's a, Uranus, trickster, genius, nature's evolutionary wonderfulness is it was at 17 degrees of Taurus. So I like that he wanted to get busted, some little dim part of his remaining soul, but he was busted by nature, right? Yes. So all of nature. But then to us, just to kind of honor the chart of now, and remember that astrology is really the original language of interrelatedness, all in this dream together, all here together. Mm. You know, correspondence, true without falsehood. That which is most true, that which is above is that which is below, that which is below is that which is above, for the performance of the miracles of the one thing. But our first maps are our star maps, and this, you know, interrelatedness. So part of, you know, just to entertain this possibility, that astrology is an exquisite language of our interior psyche, separated by a thin membrane we call identity, from the whole big, huge biological and cultural conversation that pours into all of our psyches in customized ways. So here we are now, and it's a very cool chart, and you know, the moon just passed full, right, which is the timing of Way Holy Week, right? This is the Last Supper tonight. It's Maundy Thursday, tomorrow's crucifixion. Right, or that's why they said, why wasn't Jesus hung? Because then you'd have to go that. Yeah, that's right. But, so this is Maundy Thursday. This is the Last Supper. We always time Passover, Easter. You know, it's, the whole Easter holiday. It's the first Sunday after the full moon, after the equinox. Right. So we just had this big full moon, and it's rising just past full now, at 28 degrees of Libra. Each degree of the zodiac has a metaphor associated with it, and I love that degree. And it also happens to be where Mars was when Ami was born. And the image for Ami's Mars and our moon for all of us right now is men toiling in a dark pit, a woman calmly lowers a rope. And
so I like carry that. Rope in my car.
Just for that. And I like it because, you know, the woman part of all of us, regardless of temporary gender assignment, everything, you know, is going, here's a rope. You can climb out anytime you want. Wait, I got stuff to do. I'll just tie it to a tree. There you go. Come on back up. So that's wonderful. And then it's in a very beautiful pattern. I'll say it and translate it. The moon just passed full at 28 Libra with a beautiful 150 degree angle to Venus in Taurus. Beautiful singers, beautiful throat. You know, and so it's that conversation that is happening out there, in all of us, between Libra and Taurus, the two Venuses. Libra is the cultural Venus, and Taurus is the participatory animism Venus. And so it speaks to all of us that by our art and our craft and our dedication that we aspire to deepen this evening, you know, that we pledge to be a cultural expression on behalf of something that we love in nature and are in nature. Yes. So it's like, ooh. And it's a beautiful, what's called a, thank you, but I'll slow down for that.
Cultural beauty.
That's good. No, absolutely. We're to-ing and fro-ing. Wonderful. And so it's part of what's called a yod or a finger of destiny. The moon, 150 degree angle to Venus, the two Venuses, nature and human culture wanting to come into accord. And then the other side, a 150 degree angle down to Neptune, dreams, vision, imagination, fairy tales, music, and a little beautiful 60 degree angle between them. It's called a finger of destiny or a yod, and it says if you connect these, you know, if we aspire to connect these, the beauty in nature to the beauty of human culture and the power of dreams and vision and fairy tales and music, and remember that music and metaphor are the incarnational garb whereby power enters the world, you know, and then manifests in beautiful music and all of that. So we go, ooh, powerful thing. And then the moon trines Saturn in Pisces, 120-degree angle, trines Mars overhead and Cancer trines back to the moon. So just to how we are being blessed. So each planet, you know, represents, you know, a part of us, a living quality of intelligence that resides within us and connects us to the world. Saturn is authority and how we define things and dedicate and take vows. So it's the part of us we most all tend to outsource to crackpot sociopathic dingbats in the world, and hence the crisis of outsourced Saturn. And so we are here this evening in a variety of ways that my accomplices and I will invite us to insource our authority. The more we insource our own Saturn, we suck the chi out of external tyranny. So pull that in.
Yes.
And it's a useful ongoing forever kind of a thing, which is whenever we feel fear, like, it's outsourced Saturn. Can it be a large thing or like, you know, got to call the dentist? We go, no, outsource Saturn. I'm hailing authority back from that dread, just to kind of check. And as we go into Saturn is time and rhythm. And we know that when our hearts beat slow, time slows down. And when our heart beats quickly, time speeds up, which is the double catch when we get a little panicked, like not enough time, then you really don't have enough time, right? Because then it speeds up. And so it's like slowing time down. And Saturn in Pisces right now, first time since 1994, is our dedication to water and to dreams and to a whole other kind of time. You know, pre-clock time, as happening with us, fluid time. So all of us now, we get to step into the traveling now, as Terry Pratchett says, it's the traveling now, and to slow down our heartbeats, right, just together. And I always love the photograph of a young girl in a wheelchair in a corral, and she's, I think it's MS, but her neurons are misfiring. And the horses sense this, and the horses form a circle around her, and they slow their heartbeats down into a unified field. Doom, doom. And it creates an atmosphere which then helps the young girl in the wheelchair for her neurons to calm down. Mm-hmm. So it's part of, you know, how shall we be effective and collaborate and slow things down? And it's a colleague who has much to say about many things that we're going to dive into, like testosterone and time in a moment. He says it's really like the 17th century when Western European culture gets tobacco and caffeine and clocks. Right? And all at once, right? Because before that, you didn't need a clock. You told time, you know, by intimate cahoots where the sun is and where the moon is and intimacy with the world, you know, and then, you know, when, as we get to honor Mars and what do we want to bring into play, Mars is our woofiness. It's right now in the sign of Cancer, which in old fogey astrology, it's really to examine all of our traditions going, is this still useful or is this superstitious nonsense? Just in the sense of what does our culture encourage? So Mars is woofiness, and in traditional, mostly male medieval astrology, Mars in Cancer is called in its fall because it's not like hyper-aggressive. It's like wuzza-wuzza. Right, but it reminds us, you know, some things are always true, but there are times when they're truer. And my buddy Robert Bly said, you know, at the point of industrialism, the loneliest person in the world was the man who's got to leave the tending, the husbandry, the tending of the crops and the babies and the beauty and the wonderfulness, and go to like a factory or an office or indoors. You know, it's a tremendous loss. But Mars in Cancer now for us says, let's remember this, the positive yang, you know, quality. And Mars has got this, well, many, many beautiful angles to it. It's trining Saturn. It means the power of our dedication this evening is strong and wonderful. We will come to what guides us to that. But But it was interesting because Sean Patrick O'Donohue, who was also reporting on testosterone, which is a very Mars thing. And he said, no, you know, we can find it in nature in pine forests, and pine bark is very testosterone, and it's good for people. And it's like Diana Beresford Kroger says, you know, walk into a pine forest, you always come out smarter because of the pine aerosols. And it's like, so even at Christmas when a tree gives its life to come inside, going, I'm giving my life, but I hope to make the people inside the house smarter just because they're bringing me in there. And I go, thank you, tree. But what Sean says is testosterone is not intrinsically aggressive. It woofifies whatever social game one is engaged in, right? So then back to when the clock comes in and the caffeine comes in, you know, and the coffee, it's caffeine, coffee, and clocks all at once, and then leaving the land, the separation from the land. So we're entering into modern productivity time where aggression is rewarded. So then testosterone is like, ah, if you're in a game and it's a finite game, you know, I remember James Carr says there's finite games about winning, infinite games about keeping everything in play. So this conspiracy, these forks in the road that we want to kind of go back to and redeem, like how did we get to here? We go, let's go back into the dream world, the dream time, but also the before clocks time, you know, and the positive yang of all of us was tending and protecting. You know, I love Mars in Cancer as strong enough to be gentle. And I love, there was a biker guy in Baja who's like heavily tattooed, and he said, I just have a little bit of space left, what should I put? And I go, how about strong enough to be gentle? He's like, I'm gonna do it. So we go, that's good. But when Sean said testosterone woofifies whatever social game one is invested in or dedicated to, he said, if you gave extra testosterone, you know, to the Dalai Lama or Tibetan books, Tibetan Buddhists, it's like more peace, peace. And so I find this so nutrient-rich for us all to consider. So it's like, well, then we want to change the game. You know, what part of everybody are we inviting to play, and in what way? So. So I love being here. I've not been here before at Freight and Salvage, but as a friend was noticing, going, that sounds like a place of repurposing. So Saturn quintiles Uranus now, and a beautiful 72-degree angle of irresistible eloquence and the capacity to open portals between worlds. And what it says to all of us is dedication is freedom, right? So we were going to insource our authority and bring in Obatala, yeah?
Yes. And if you all want to like kind of close your eyes and just imagine a cool head and just hear the slowness, Obatala, the symbol is all white, an old man with a beautiful cane, all white. Ba ba fu ru ru e re re o ro. Oba kanyenye elejibo ilehi fa obati basawo heribore rebati bawo enuaye Bawaloro, eyawaloro, ele sioka.
So we're insourcing wise leadership and exhaling that blessing out into the world. So it's you know, and it's also. My great accomplices, remember this beautiful music really invites us to undulate, to undulate, right? So the sky rivers are stalling, right? The part of the sargassum 5,000 mile seaweed mass that's moving towards Florida and Mexico, right? It's like it's leaving its Sargasso Sea home because of the currents being messed up by human rudeness again. And so the loss of undulating. So it's the least we can do is to undulate. Feel free throughout the evening. We'll have special invitations for undulating, but again, the watery current. Oh, that's nice. Lovely. And it's also part of, so we have the hyper yang thing that we want to cool out. We want the testosterone from the pine, you know, again, dedicated to whatever game we're invested in, change the game to liberate everyone. You know, and that's also just part of my interest in language. There's a near pandemic uptake of the use of the word impact. Right? So it's like, it's everywhere. Want to have an impact investing, and it's like really a short, violent encounter like that. You know, as opposed to a long, curvy influence, right? And it's just, again, Jornus, genius trickster, says, we are big beings dancing with you. We don't care what you do. We care the manner in which you do it, that it come from, you know, freedom and choice, that you have many ways to respond, many words, many metaphors, many moves, and you choose. You go, I have five wonderful words, and I choose the word impact because that's what I mean. But I think the influence, the watery influence, heals the impact, right? We've had enough impact, right? It's never really been a positive thing unless you're dying of a heart attack and you want that thing. So it's just concerned citizens for freedom, language expansion. It's also like, you know, just how we play. Language is magic, and it's, you know, there's the call and response. So, you know, so many people, excuse myself, I include myself, say I've been struggling with this issue for years. And it's like, well, what does it feel like if you replace the word struggle with dancing? I've been dancing with this issue for years. It's like, oh, there's some movement. There's even some flirtation. You know, there's even that it moves, and it's just a fun thing to play with. You know, it's like got to get to. You know, and you know, we started. This is, you know, called Majnun, right? Just such a wonderful word. We all have different associations with it. But the way I learned it, it means crazy for the divine. You know, ooh, and I learned it with my wonderful friend Deborah Felmuth in Syria at the Baghdad Cafe in this eccentric place run in the desert outside Palmyra when it was okay. And there was this mad, wonderful Bedouin, and he had altars everywhere and fossils from the desert and with feathers and things. And my friend Deborah said to him, you know, how did this happen? And he goes, Majnun. Right? And he was so fun. He's like, you, let's dress you as a Bedouin, and you come here. And then he had a drum rhythm to beat the coffee. And then he said, and we'll get married, but I'm a modern man. I'll have the children for you. Right? Anyway, he's super, super charming. I hope he's fine. But that's how I learned Majnun, many kinds of crazy, but crazy for the divine. You know, and then I'm very happy with the phrase, you know, it's the Majnun in support of endogenous indigenuity, right? Endogenous indigenuity. Because endogenous means our receptors. Like we have endogenous receptors for cannabis and for DMT, and endogenous receptors for mythology and astrology, really, too. Like, whatever. And then indigenuity is a word coined by native Curtis Catawba, who told it to his friend Dan Wildcat, who told it to my great friend Bob Goff, who told it to me. So we love lineages as well, so endogenous indigenuity. So whatever we speak to in ourselves, whatever we speak to in another, is the part of them we're inviting to dance with the corresponding part of ourselves. These are all practices, you know, that we come back to, our own guidelines, you know. And I know that that's true. You know, and sometimes, you know, before radio, you know, I'll go, you know, I probably should have read the book before I booked the guest. Oh, sweet. And then it's like, no, but remember, whatever you speak to one another is the part of them that you're inviting to play. And it's like, right. And I know that that's true. I know that that's true, which is why, you know, we're up for you know, soon our our fun experiment, you know, is giving up grievance, but we're not quite there yet, which is, I love my buddy Robert Bly saying, bring in the poets and double the madness, right? So, so democratic animism now, we love that, endogenous indigenuity. And then Lawrence Ferlinghetti, right, who died only a year ago, but he says, don't wait for the revolution or it'll happen without you. Stop mumbling and speak out with a new, wide, open poetry. I'm signaling you through the flames. The North Pole is not where it used to be. Manifest destiny is no longer manifest. Civilization self-destructs. Nemesis is knocking at the door. What are poets for in such an age? What is the use of poetry? The state of the world calls out for poetry to save it. If you would be a poet, create works capable of answering the challenge of apocalyptic times, even if this means sounding apocalyptic. You are Whitman, you are Poe, you are Mark Twain, you are Emily Dickinson and Edna St. Vincent Millay, you are Neruda and Mayakovsky and Pasolini, you are an American or a non-American, you can conquer the conquerors with words. Yeah. Oh, we love that, exactly. So part of that also are to free that up, you know, and to play again, the more words, the more portals. It's also part of the power of Saturn. It's to spiral out of polarity, because polarity really only feeds authoritarianism out there. And again, practices. It's often useful, you know, in a conversation to ask people to define things. What's your definition of good leadership? What's your definition of wise governance? You know, because then it's like, oh, you know, Saturn is our power of definition, to inhale that back. You know, and then, you know, again, unless we ask it in a snarky way, but it is really useful. Yes, I told you there'd be parts of my notes that are like, what are you doing here? But it's alive. It has a mind of its own. The sargassum seaweed said, wait, you need to say more about me. The sargassum seaweed, 5,000 miles long. But it's like, okay, you know, the world is having a fertilizer crisis due to the war on Ukraine and all. You know, seaweed, all those people who know how to make alcohol fuel out of seaweed and everything, it's like all these people who are ingenious solutions, it's like step up there. Because the mainstream, we can't afford to let mainstream narrators or reactors rather than responders, you know, because they're like, well, we'll have to take giant trucks and destroy all the beaches and who. It's like, no. So this is, you know, where's our first responders, our ingenuity responders, and our metaphoric first responders as well to kind of come in. Yes, thank you. The sargassum wanted me to say that. Now, one of the beautiful things about language is we dedicate, craft means power from dedication. So for each one of us, all of us, to go to wonder, you know, what is our primary dedication? Mm. And that's our craft. And craft also means boat. So our sturdy boat, the deeper our dedication, the sturdier our boat, you know, in the wild seas around. Also, the word vessel in all languages means container and boat. So we here right now are brewing in our vessel. We're stirring the cauldron, stirring the vessel, but not putting a lid on it, right? So, and then by the end of the evening, we will get in our vessel and take off, right? But I love that in all languages, it means boat as well as container, that there's something, you know, powerful and beautiful about that. So for the longest time, you know, I have loved Terry Pratchett's novel, I Shall Wear Midnight. And I find it so useful, his witch novels. And we'll tell the witch Instagram story at some perfect moment, okay. But the reason I love this novel and talk about it often and find it very practical is the cunning man has come to town and created mob mind. And mob mind invites the worst of people. And it's the rough music that causes somebody to pick up a stick and then another person to kick up and do this unspeakable cruelty that we've seen in our species. you know, beating a man who says, I just want to get home, you know, just everywhere, the unspeakable cruelty. So the mob mind does that. And so the young girl witch's task is to dissolve mob mind, invite the best in it, you know, and to, you know, take on the cunning man. And she discovers that the cunning man finds purchase in all whose hearts are filled with grievance or revenge or vengeance. And that's where the cunning man comes to live. My friend Pat, we were doing our election magic council, said, what is the antonym of grievance? I'm like, oh, good question. Because all of right-wing tyranny runs on grievance, not the same as grief. It's the toxic mimic of grief, because grievance is hatred and grief is love. You know, and so to dissolve grievance and then to again self-monitor, like where do we outsource our Saturn, you know, like you know, and then how to insource and calm our hearts down as options of response so that we're not caught up in reactivity. But the grievance is a very interesting one too, because kind of working with this and working with this with other people and then going, I don't really have grievance, and then going, I do. You know, I mean, just going, oh, and that person did that. Yeah, you know, once this full moon, right, there's like full moon, very beautiful, but it does pull everything up like ribbon grass, like, you know, memories of wonderful things, but also, you know, and so the grievance is like any impediment in our heart to blessing. I think we get to keep spiciness and insults and diagnosis and Mae West and Groucho Marx and things. That's not grievance. You know, that's kind of liberation and play. But grievance, you know, it's something I think we want to kind of recognize in ourselves and then to see it out there like, you know, because it turns toxic. And the young girl witch, Tiffany, says, you know, we can feel mob mind. You know, it's like it's a collective mind that pushes down and erupts through the thinnest of membranes, which is why a friend of mine who's a forensic psychiatrist, her job is to maintain kinship with perpetrator of crimes, right? Saying it's nothing, no crime is strictly personal, it's collective. The pressure comes down and erupts through these membranes. She, you know, investigates children have killed their mother, and it's like, we are killing our mother. Mm-hmm. It's all one thing, and people are possessed. And see, this model of possession is, I think, quite useful without getting, you know, too spooked about the thing. Like, I don't think the former guy, Tiny, is the cunning man. I think he's possessed, mm-hmm. right? Those whose hearts are filled with resentment or grievance, they get, you know, possessed. So, So the cunning man, you know, finds purchase in all those whose hearts are filled with grievance. And so we have I'll just set it up a little bit too. So this is, I think, is just with the help of this beautiful music to feel any grievance, known or unknown, that we get to dissolve it out of our hearts with this beautiful, deep music.
Thank you.
Whoa, beautiful and effective. So because working with this theme, you know, at one point I was just driving down the road going, grievance is outsourced autonomy. It's like, oh, right, that's right. And then sometimes our revelations are more important to us and not so interesting to others. But here it goes anyway, which is I just thought the fate of the world really requires humans dissolving grievance out of their heart. And we make these distinctions, but it's like that. So that's a beautiful, beautiful start to release that, you know, and it's, right, because it's an impediment to our participating in the reciprocal blessing, you know, and we can have spicy commentaries and, you know, and interesting conversations like, is it important for people to know what dingbats they were, you know, or the mean thing they did? And it's like, it may or may not be any of our business, you know, but for us to outsource, and it's just when we scan the horizon of our lives where it's like, oof, that thing, you know, that. So yeah, grievances outsourced autonomy. For me, that was like, oh, I'm going to work with that, you know. And then, just for the fun of it, when I sometimes engage in, you know, talking across borders to, you know, right-wing dingbats, you know, and then it's time to leave, you know, going time to, I just go a blessing, you know. May we all, you know, may we all awaken tomorrow self-possessed rather than merely possessed, right? And everybody likes that because they think like, and it's, so it works. It's an effective blessing. They're like, right on, you know. So it's like that's useful just to put in your magic backpack of a repertoire of responses that are liberating, whimsical, true, you know, and effective. Right, and so that the idea also about, you know, impact as opposed to influence, not to adopt the weapons of the oppressor or the language, you know. So David does not use Goliath's, you know, Golumphiness, right? He goes, and so, yes, we apparently don't need any of these things. Or come next week, and we'll get to that next week. Okay. Oh, Instagram witch thing, right? Well, so on Instagram, what your wonderful organization posted that you were
World Trust, yes.
What is it, World Trust?
World Trust, yes.
Right, and maybe you'll say a little bit about that. But and then it said that, you know, our wonderful head of World Trust is on a panel tonight, and I go, well, it's not exactly a panel, and I just wrote in the comments section going, no paneling three woofy witches. You know, and I got flagged that said, you know, you might want to edit your comment because of its, you know, dangerous, abusive language. And I go,
right?
So I took witch out, and it was like, fine.
Big Brother said, okay.
Like, isn't that whoa, freaky? The algorithms of the Inquisition are little micro things everywhere, right?
So now I'm going to go back to our Instagram account and just write, witch, I'm a witch, I'm going to pop it and type witch a million times.
Right.
Witch.
Yeah, and then, but
Witch.
Witch is a wonderful novel.
Yeah.
You know that one?
You told me about
Witch.
Oh,
that's great. Yeah, you know, children's literature is, you know, there's a wonderful novel called Witch by Eva Ibbotson. God, it's probably banned by now. It's amazing. Oh, my God. Yeah, and it's about a young girl witch who heals by singing praise. It's very beautiful.
Hello?
I'm
just like, congratulate. Like, that's exactly what it's all about.
Yeah.
Heal by singing praise.
Right. Well, so
exactly.
Somebody has injured a very important worm, you know, and so she sings to it about, you know, wormy things, you know, and dark, slippery places, and heals the worm that way. And somebody has injured their hand, and she gently holds it and sings to it about the cleverness of five. And yeah, it's a wonderful, Witch
right.
is a wonderful, wonderful
yeah.
novel. You know, and then just, you know, we reach everything. So we're composting, you know, all that hot reactivity and so many tripwires, right, that people have, you know, like conversation, and then, you know, there's, I won't say them, right, because everybody's got their tripwire kind of issue. I was once texting with a woman, sort of an interesting big deal kind of movie person, but a wonderful person who was like, and you will be my best friend, and we'll, they already, and we were texting back and forth, and I used an emoji, and she was like, no, no emojis, no, no friendships. And I was like, oh, okay, tripwire, didn't see that coming. Okay, but the tripwire, it's like the Baptist joke, right, of, you know, a man's hiking in the south and on a cliff and runs into another man and they go, hi, hello, hello, brother, Baptist, yes, Baptist, and third Reformation, Baptist, yes, third Reformation, the fourth reconvening of the thing, no, die, heretic, anyway. So it's like everybody's got their things, and again, we want to dissolve that, yes.
Wait, can I tell you a tripwire?
Oh, yeah.
The latest one that I've gotten slammed on is, you use too many exclamation points. I'm like, really? It's,
do you know what an exclamation point is? Oh, I told
do
you.
Tell.
Oh, I told you that.
Right.
Well, I learned it from Michael Schneider, right? So, yeah, no, that's right. We want to use exclamation points in an informed way because they're really wonderful. Exclamation point, it comes from Greek drama, and it was written in the margins, I-O, meaning to be delivered with great joy.
Ah.
Isn't that wonderful?
Ah.
So when people say, you know, a revolution in toilet paper, no, no, or, you know, you suck, no, no, it's meant to be delivered with great joy. It's, and
yes.
Everything wants to be liberated to its original dedicated purpose,
yes.
Right? So, yeah, you used too many exclamation points, that's right.
For joy and rapture.
Exactly. And then just to bring up how the solution is in the problem. So we have these tripwires, this hot reactivity, this vitriol, the vitriolic discourse. So this is so wonderful. My friend Micah, who is a true alchemist, many people call themselves that, she really is, but she says vitriol is a word puzzle. V-I-T-R-I-O-L stands for visita interiora terrae rectificando in venes occultum lapidem, or visit the interior of the earth to purify and find the hidden stone.
Yes.
So that's what vitriol means, or that's the antidote to vitriol contained within it, which is so great. And she says the motto was created by the 15th century alchemist Basil Valentine, and besides being a literal mineral work reference, it also refers to diving deep within to our darkest place to confront our own most caustic aspects and then using them for spiritual purification. It's like, right. So to metabolize vitriol, do that. We're ready to ladle out gratitude. There we go. So you have a song for us to, we were dissolving grievance and ladling out gratitude. Gratitude is the antonym and the antidote for grievance. Thank you.
Bravo, bravo. Mm.
Very, very beautiful. So, because Jupiter, gratitude, beautiful, beautiful, grateful. We have our craft with which to set sail in our vessel. Let us be accomplices of necessary miracles, you know, our dedications. Let our craft be our craft, our vessel, our vessel. Our little coracle, like Inanna's coracle, our little round woven boat. You know, so each person to see, well, what is your dedicated craft and what is your vessel, your boat? You know, is it round? Is it woven? Is it speedy? Is it all of those things? You know, and I remember Harriet Tubman could read planets and plants, right, on every kind of dimension. You know, and she said she saw herself as a vessel of God, and part of being a vessel of God was to be able to read the stars and the plants in their philosophical meaning and in their practical guidance as well. We love that.
Yes.
And so we have beautiful Ami and Brianna have a sailing Egyptian song for sailing home. But just there's so many sailing home. You know, our beloved former president, you know, Jimmy Carter, right? He's in hospice, but just to honor him as positive leadership, who said quite a ways ago, but he goes, there's no way to separate peace from freedom, from democracy, from human rights, from environmental equality, and from the alleviation of suffering. I hope to find a way to transform the despair that people feel into hope and the expectation of a better life. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
So, you know, many have heard the tale of Tokito, the orca, whose many have worked to have her returned to Puget Sound, where she was taken 50 years ago at the age of 4 in a horrific culling. You know, many orcas were killed, many mothers were separated from their calves, 50 were taken on display, and this one particular orca was moved to a theme park in Florida, where she knew one other orca who killed himself by batting his head against the enclosure, and it's like, oh, humans, you know, let us again continue to dissolve cruelty and dominance out of the repertoire, you know, cruelty, dominance, tyranny out of the repertoire, and all of the watery beings in accord with that. And so kept in small water. But many people have worked to see her free, and there is a plan. In 18 to 24 months, it's like, she's 54, can we move it forward a little bit? But also what's poignant, so it was an important sports guy who had the money, and then the Lummi Indians who consider the orcas their kin and have been working for her release for 50 years. And they know that her mother is still alive. It's like, so for all that this means, you know, let's get in our craft, our vessel made sturdy by our dedication with desire as our rudder, you know, and set sail for home, that all make it home. And as my friend Deborah Felma says, salam, peace. It's not the absence of conflict, it's the presence of oneness, right? So everyone makes it home to an ocean of embracing kinship.
This one is for you all to get up and dance to if you want to. No sur belenda til medoa, ifaun again til medsa. No sur belenda til medoa, ifaun again til medsa.
Yo, team. So we've just been listening to Majnun, Trickster Guide to Necessary Miracles, with my fantastic accomplices, Brianna Damara and Amakela Gaston, setting forth and sailing. So tonight, Ami and I will be further brewing and distilling in our collective vessel, our craft, and that will be at Open Secret Bookstore tonight, 6 p.m., find out more about that, rob@opensecretbookstore.com. And then also I will be presenting this weekend at the New Living Expo, and that will be Saturday, 2 to 4 p.m. Bodhisattva Coyote Brer Rabbit Rumi Guide to Being a Good Citizen Trickster. Yes, all of us, everywhere, wherever we are, autonomy is a sacrament, cooling out the conflagration, being responsive, not reactive. So Saturday, 2 to 4 p.m., New Living Expo. All details can be found at coyotenetworknews.com. Part of the dynamic is nature's evolutionary genius, aka Uranus and Taurus, is eager to cahoot for necessary miracles. The whole key is we as humans, we just can't do this by ourselves. And Trickster willing to be our booking agent by a serendipitous synchronicity. So if we entertain the possibility that we're moving into a field of enhanced connectivity, then what is our dedication? You know, what is it that we want to be our primary dedication, our contribution to the world? And that inward dedication magnetizes outward opportunity. All Coyote wants to seal the deal, again, is our declaration of willingness. We are willing. There we go. It's not what's going to happen. It's what's available with which to cooperate. Astro-mytho-political narrative answers to that question, well, we hope. And we will reconvene next week. Thank you, team.